Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nivase Prasanya Vadi Prasthati Desvatara Om Yenatamanandasya Jinatana Salataya Saksu Sumilatanjena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam Mantakopatu Vischa Kripa Sindhu Vray Vicha Patitanam Pabane Vyo Vaishnave Vimunama. Little room. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. That sounds good. Hare Krishna. Queen Kunti is offering her prayers to Krishna for heartfelt words because she is disturbed that Krishna is leaving. He's leaving Hastinapur and going to Dwarka. The battle of Kurukshetra is over and now it's time for Krishna to go back to his city of Dwarka. He established Dwarka is described in the 50th chapter of the 10th canto when Jarasandha had attacked the city of Mathura. So to protect the residents of Mathura, who were all his relatives, they were all members of the Yadu dynasty, he built a city in Dwarka just exactly according to his own liking. Raise your hand if you've been to Dwarka. You went to Dwarka? Okay. Did Raj go also?
Yes.
Did you bring us some Mahaprasad?
That time we didn't know that we are coming back to Australia.
Okay. So Kunti Devi was feeling such sadness in her heart. It is impossible, in one sense, for us to understand the depth of her of being separate from Krishna. Because separation from someone or an object comes only when there is great love for that person or object. So unless one experiences love for Krishna, he cannot understand what separation for Krishna is. Even though separation from Krishna is missing Krishna on whatever level we can, is our methodology of advancing as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Varahabhava. But still, our goal cannot be separation from Krishna, because if we desire to feel separation from Krishna, then we will never experience separation from Krishna. Separation from Krishna comes when one desires to be with Krishna, not to be separated from. So Kunti Devi, loving Krishna in such a deep way, understanding that he was the Supreme Lord, having had Krishna protect her and her sons, the Pandavas, for so many years during their exile, and protecting the Pandavas during the Battle of Kurukshetra, and also being her nephew, but also, again, understanding that he was the Supreme Lord. And to be in Krishna's association in that way had completely captivated her. So her love was like a giant ocean wave for Krishna, and then Krishna was leaving. And this was intolerable for her, but what could she do? He's the independent Supreme Lord, he's the king, he's the chief, and what could she do? So what she did do was offer these prayers, basically begging Krishna to stay and not leave. So in the prayers that we've read up until this point, in the verses that we've read up until this point, Kunti Devi has expressed her preference for calamities even while Krishna was present than to be in a peaceful, happy situation but without Krishna's presence. Sometimes I think that we prefer a happy, peaceful situation. What Krishna, okay, he can be there, but what a time to sneeze. So obviously it was a great confirmation, but trying to suppress it. I'm just teasing you, don't worry. I'm not saying you should sneeze. Because we have a tendency to want Krishna to want peace and happiness only, basically, on the material level. Because the material world in Kali Yuga is such a difficult place to exist in, that we long for peace and happiness, but actually we can't have peace and happiness in the material realm. It's just not possible, because it is certified to Kalayama Shashvatama Nitya Sukham Lokam. It is ultimately a miserable place where repeated death takes place, if nothing else. And when we are intimately related with Krishna, then there's no question of anything being a cause of misery. Everything is only a cause of ecstasy. So the real point of curing the material problematic situation is to develop our relationship with that's the conclusion of all truly religious teachings. There is no spiritual religious path that says you should try and be happy in the material world. And even the Buddhists, who don't believe in a spiritual destination for the soul, because they don't even believe in a soul, their basic premise is that the world is suffering. It's full of dukkha. It's full of suffering. And actually the Buddhistic philosophy, which is quite popular in the West, and also in certain classes in India, and even the Indian flag, it has the wheel. And what is that chakra? Where does that come from? Does anyone know?
From Gaya. Ashoka.
Yeah, Emperor Ashoka. So that was Dr. Ambedkar put that on in the Indian flag. So Buddhism, no one believes that this is a place to happiness, that somehow or another you can convert the material energy to a happy, happy, happy energy. It's not possible. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Arbitu Anjana, that from the topmost place to the lowest place, they're very difficult. So Kunti Devi she's fearful of losing that connection with Krishna. She's fearful of that. But in that wanting to be with Krishna, whether Krishna is present or not present, she's connected to Krishna. And if you don't want to be with Krishna, if there's no love for Krishna, whether Krishna is present or not present, we're not with Krishna. So in that sense, it's quite mysterious. So Kunti Devi has shifted her prayers to now point out the inconceivable nature of Krishna, that he's very, very mysterious, because after all, he's standing right in front of her in his armor as her nephew, but he's unlimitedly powerful at the same time. How do we conceive of unlimitedly powerful and unlimitedly beautiful? Unlimitedly so. So she speaks about him being time, and not only that, an all-powerful and the supreme controller. But yet, even though he's the all-powerful supreme controller, that means that nothing in existence occurs without his sanction. He's in the terms of the Brahma Samhita, he's sarva karana karanam. He's the cause of all causes, the ultimate cause of everything. But yet, he's not the one who's responsible for the difficulties in this world. That's quite inconceivable. Because we would think, if he's the cause of it, of everything that happens, then anything that happens that I don't like, it's all his fault. But Krishna explains, or Kunti Devi explains, no, you are actually equal to everyone. Your mercy is flowing to everyone. And although you are the cause of all causes, you're not only impartially giving your mercy to everyone, and we spoke about this yesterday, but also the difficulties that exist in this world are the personal responsibility for each individual, because of how they've acted and their fate, their karma, their fate, and they're meeting their fate. So then she's explaining this in the frame of reference that Krishna is very, very difficult to understand. Actually, reality itself is very difficult to understand. And although that it appears that one person or one country or one community or family is flourishing and another family or community or person is having so much difficulty, it's not Krishna who's doing this out of his friendship with one and enmity with another. No, he is equal to everyone. Samoham savabhuteshu na me dveshosti na priya. No one is priya or dear to him, and no one is dvesha. He is not inimical or envious of anyone. People, as she explained, Kunti Devi explained in the verse we read yesterday, people imagine only that you are partial. What does it mean? We say that people imagine that you are partial. It is that partiality, that Krishna is favoring one person and not another. People are thinking like that. It's only in their mind. They're imagining it. It has nothing to do with actually what's happening. So then she's going to explain some more of the inconceivable nature of Krishna. And let's see if we'll have accompaniment here. That was one verse. And today is the 30th verse. I'll speed through these. And next one. Whoops. Yeah. Jan, okay, please repeat it. Jana cha vishvatman. Janma karma cha vishvatman. Janma karma cha vishvatman. So she's explaining how inconceivable and not contradictory Krishna is appearing, because he is born, Janma, and he performs activities, he performs karma, cha, and he's born and performs activities, and he's the Vishva Atma, he's the soul of the universe. But at the same time, Ajasyakarturatmana. Ajasya means that he is unborn. So he is Janma and Ajasya. This person is unborn also. So he's born and unborn, and he performs karma, but akartu, he is inactive, he does nothing. And Atmana, he's the, Srila Prabhupada translates this in his word by words, as he's the vital energy of all in existence. There is nothing that can move or act without Krishna providing that energy to it in all of existence. Neither the grass growing, nor the sun rising, nor our hair growing, nor anything. Nothing in existence has any energy, vital energy, unless Krishna gives it to it. So not only is he acting and not acting, he's providing the energy for all in existence to act. And then the third line over here. Tiryan drishtishu yadashu. Tiryan drishtishu yadashu. And not only that, is Krishna doing that, and Krishna is standing right in front of Kunti Devi, but also your Tiryan drishti yadashu, that you come into this world as avatars, as Tiryan means animal, Nri, so bring that Sandhi to Nri, and Rishi, Rishishu. So Nri means humans, and Rishi means the sages, and Yadashu means in the water. So you incarnate. Your avatar is an animal, as Varaha Dev or Nrisinga Dev, and as a human being, like Lord Ramachandra or Krishna Balaram, and Rishi, like Naranarayan Rishi, and in the water is the Matsya avatar. Taradyanta vidambanam. And that, how you don't do anything, but you are doing everything, and you are not born, although you take your birth, And you are the soul of the universe. You give life to the universe, just like the soul gives life to the body. And as soon as the soul leaves the body, there is no life. You cannot do anything. So you are the one who gives life to the entire universe, the vital energy to Vishvatma and the Atmana. You provide the energy to everything in existence that's being done. This is the meaning. It's such an intricate and detailed conception of what the Supreme Absolute Truth is and what God is. So you are doing that, and the things that you're doing appear contradictory to each other. And then, not only that, you come to this world as a varaha. Varaha means a boar. And although you know everything and you're all powerful, still you come as a boar to go and bring up the earth using the power of smell, like pigs, hogs. That's their strong power. That's like dogs. Dogs have very weak eyesight. Did you know that? You didn't know that. And they don't wear glasses either. But still, they don't. But they see everything by smelling. That's why when you see them walking on the ground, they're walking with. Not they're not like this. Like this. Have you noticed that? Yes. Sometimes if maybe they wear glasses on their nose. I don't know. But they see with their. They sense everything. They perceive reality by its smell. Just imagine what that's like. I mean. Don't imagine too much what it's like, but we do that to some degree, a little bit. You know, that's one of our senses, but our hearing is more dominant and our eyes are more dominant. But Krishna comes even as a, like in the form of a hog, as Varahadev, but yet he's not a hog at all. He's completely transcendental and all-powerful. He doesn't lose any of his power when he's in the form of an animal. So this is inconceivable. And then he comes like a human, but when he comes like a human, he's not a human. And even if he's performing, when he's comes as Lord Ramachandra, he's performing the activities, Maryada Purushottama, as the ideal human being, but still, he's not a human being. He's as if he's a human being, but he's actually always the all-powerful Supreme Lord. So what causes the all-powerful Supreme Lord to come to this world as a hog, a boar, even though a transcendental hog or a boar? And when he came, it's described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, he appeared from the nostril of Lord Brahma. So what a place to appear from, to come from. And Lord Nrisingadev, his mother was like a pillar. He appeared from the pillar, and breaking it apart, he burst out of the pillar, because Hiranyakashipu said, being an atheist, he said, "I don't believe you're God. You're always praying to this God to protect you." Even though he had seen Krishna, or Lord Nrisingadev, or Krishna, he had seen that this boy, this young boy is being protected at every moment, because Hiranyakashipu himself tried in so many ways to kill him. And he saw that the boy couldn't be killed. So he saw that the boy, not only was he unable to be killed, he was fearless. And he was in no anxiety, even when in the presence of his father, who was supposed to be the protector, but who the father was trying to kill him and was completely inimical with him. And the boy was in no anxiety. So he said to Prahlad, in both anger and fear, that, "Where are you getting your power from? Because I know where I got my power from, and your power is great, seems to be greater than mine, and you don't fear me, who everyone in the world is fearing, and even all the great demigods, the devatas, they were bowing down, offering their obeisances to Hiranyakashipu, except for Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, but all the rest of the devatas, including Narada Muni, used to offer their obeisances to Hiranyakashipu. So he asked Prahlad, where are you getting your power from? And Prahlad very innocently said, I'm getting my power from the same place you're getting your power from, because everyone's power is coming from the same place, because Krishna is the Vishvatma. He's the soul of the universe. He's the source of everyone's power. And we have our power, power of our physical strength, power of our mental strength, power of our physical beauty. And in 1 second, we can lose it all. Krishna can take away his gift and we no longer have it. Whatever ability and power we have is gift of Krishna. So Prahlad said, I'm getting my strength from the same place you are getting your strength from. And that applies to all of us. We get our strength from the same place that Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu and get their strength from Krishna. So then Hiranyakashipu said, you're always talking about a God who's more powerful than me, who's everywhere. But you say that he's everywhere, but I don't see him anywhere. So this is the same thing that Kunti Devi said at the beginning of our prayers. Although you're everywhere, anta bahir vastitam alakshasava bhutanam, that no one can see you. No one can see you, O Lord, even though you're everywhere. So this is the great argument between the atheists and the theists, because the theists see God everywhere and the atheists see him nowhere. Both of them have two eyes and they both have their two eyes open and looking at the world, and they see completely different things. But that should not surprise us, because we should know that we see according to our consciousness. We see not according to reality, but we see according to our consciousness. We see a little bit of reality. Just like there was one devotee who was a physiotherapist, and when he would watch everyone walking or moving or sitting, he could tell that they were having some problem with their leg or some problem with their neck or some problem with their back. He looked at them and he saw their physical problems like that. And we don't have that ability like that, because it's Krishna's gift. Everyone sees according to their own consciousness, because that's what he was doing all day long with different people. Or an editor, a person who is expert in writing. When he reads something, he doesn't only see the content, he sees all the silly mistakes that are people's in writing also, and so many different things like that. Or if you're trying to buy a new car, you start seeing new cars for sale everywhere. If you're trying to buy a new house, you see houses for sale everywhere. But it's not that there are, as soon as you start looking for new houses, houses start popping up in more places than usual. No, the same houses are always there, but your vision changes because your consciousness changes and you see different things. So the devotees, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Valochanena, because Shanta Sadaiva Ridyeshu Valokanatiyam Shama Sundaram Achintya Guna Sarupa, they see Krishna not once and not one time, but they see him 24 hours a day. This is real devotee. There is nowhere that they look where they don't see Krishna. Just imagine that consciousness, that everywhere they look, they see Krishna. And the materialistic person, when one has a materialistic mind, we just see matter, dead. And the atheists and the theists, the devotees and the atheists, they will fight and they will argue and argue and argue, and they will have scientific proofs on both sides. They will never agree because their consciousnesses are different. So when Prahlad Maharaj was asked by Hiranyakashipu, where is your God? I don't see him anywhere. And Prahlad said, he's everywhere. And usually the way arguments go on nowadays, it's, he's everywhere. And they say, no, he's not. Yes, he is. No, he's not. Yes, he is. But Hirani Kashipu wasn't one to argue because he was used to having everything his way. So he said, if you say he's everywhere, that means he's somewhere. If he's everywhere, he's also here. And he pointed to the pillar. And then he said, well, I've tried so many ways to kill you, and I've not succeeded. And now I'm going to kill you myself. And he pulled out his sword, and he said, but before I do that, you say your God is in this pillar. I'm going to kill him. So he's, everyone knows what happened. I won't ruin the story for you. We'll hear it tomorrow. But the rest is history, they say. So that really shows something wonderful. So many wonderful things. But he's everywhere. And yet, because of our materialistic consciousness, we don't see him anywhere. So, and even if we could see him right in front of us, like Kamsa saw him right in front of him, but he couldn't see him, even though he was right in front of him. And Kaliya, the snake, saw Krishna right in front of him, and he even appreciated how beautiful he was, and then he couldn't see him, rather he bit him on the chest. Yes, that was better than your sneeze even, to confirm things. So it's amazing how Krishna takes birth, but he's eternal by definition. He has activities. But what is he? Because an activity means you're interacting with something that's different from you. Even like when, if I touch something, or I touch something, so it's different from my hand when I'm touching. There's difference, but what's different from Krishna? One way of looking at it. And what is he interacting with that's not him? So he's active. And he's the vital energy, the life force of everything in existence. And he comes to this world like an animal, but yet he's still the Supreme Lord. And he's a human being, because he comes as Rama and Krishna, and he steals butter, but he's still the unlimited, all-knowing, powerful Lord. And he comes as a sage, when he's the object that sages long to experience, and he comes even as a fish in the water, as Matsya, and swims around. So then she says, Tad Adyanta Vidambanam. This Adyanta, this ultimately is, this is veritably, this is completely bewildering, truly bewildering how you do all these different things. So here is Srila Prabhupada's translation. Of course, it is bewildering, O soul of the universe, that you work though you are inactive. Because what is, we work because we want something, we act because we need something. But what does Krishna need? What does Krishna want? What doesn't Krishna have? What causes him to act? And you take birth though you are the vital force and the unborn. You yourself descend amongst animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Verily, truly, this is bewildering. Prabhupada has a short purport to this. Not so short, but not so long. Just, yeah, one more paragraph. Listen carefully, and after I read it, I'm going to ask you what you remember. You ready? You sure? The transcendental pastimes of the Lord are not only bewildering, but also apparently contradictory. In other words, they are all inconceivable to the limited thinking power of the human being. The Lord is the all-pervading supersoul of all existence, and yet he appears in the form as a boar among the animals, in the form of a human being as Rama, Krishna, etc., in the form of a rishi like Narayan Rishi, and in the form of an aquatic, like a fish. Yet, it is said that he is unborn, and he has nothing to do. In the Shruti Mantra, it is said that the Supreme Brahman has nothing to do. No one is equal to or greater than him. He has manifold energies. and everything is performed by him perfectly by automatic knowledge, strength, and activities. All these statements prove, without any question, that the Lord's activities, forms, and deeds are all inconceivable to our limited thinking power. And because he is inconceivably powerful, everything is possible in him. Therefore, no one can calculate him exactly. No one can understand the extent of his power. Every action of the Lord is bewildering to the common man. He cannot be understood by the Vedic knowledge, but he can be easily understood by the pure devotees because they are intimately related with him. The devotees therefore know that although he appears amongst the animals, he is not an animal, nor a man, nor a rishi, nor a fish. He is eternally the Supreme Lord in all circumstances. Okay, what do you remember? Raise your hand. He's the Supreme Lord in all circumstances. Yes.
His activities are bewildering and inconceivable.
His activities are bewildering. Thank you. And inconceivable. What do we mean when we say they're inconceivable? In the sense that Krishna, you know, our Vrindavan example, he steals butter. So we can conceive of him stealing butter. So how is it inconceivable?
It is not on the same material platform as the activities at this one.
Yeah, so we can conceive of Pratik stealing butter, and we can understand why he has stolen butter. No, we can't. But why would Krishna steal butter? He's the Supreme Lord, thousands and unlimited Lakshmi Sahasra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam. But why would he do that? And sometimes he gets caught, and he's all powerful, and he has Maya. He can cover anyone's eyes and anyone's consciousness, but yet he gets caught. And sometimes when he gets caught, he cries. See? He cries. Why did he cry? Because he was afraid. Afraid of what? Getting punished. So he's the all-powerful Supreme Lord. And yet, he cries and he's afraid of being punished for stealing. So how will our mind that can't understand what his mind is like, we can only understand about what my own mind is like, how can I understand what the unlimited, all-powerful Lord, what's driving him to act in that way? We cannot, so it's inconceivable and bewildering. Anyone else like this? Now I've blacked out all your memories of what we read because it was so long ago. Who remembers something?
His activities are contradictory.
Contradictory. Would you like to say something about that? In what sense are they contradictory? What do they contradict?
Like he's the husband of Goddess of Fortune, yet he steals butter. Why does he need to do that?
Why does he need to do that?
Yeah.
It's very bewildering. Vidambanam. And it's contradictory. He's born, he's unborn. He's eternal, yet he takes his birth from Mother Devaki and also from Mother Yashoda.
He's powerful, but he cries.
He's all-powerful, and he cries. So this is contradictory and bewildering. Thank you. Anyone else? Someone else had their hand. Yes.
He descends into
the human form, the animal form, the aquatic form,
takes all those different bodies.
But? Mm-hmm.
But he's inconceivable.
Yeah, but he's not an animal or a fish or even a rishi. His body is always composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, and it's always all powerful.
Just to add on that point, even though
you didn't raise your hand, you have to go in the corner.
No, I'm adding on to Mataji's point.
But you didn't raise your hand.
Sorry.
Okay, you raised your hand. Okay, you're forgiven.
At the beginning of Krishna consciousness, we learn that the only difference between animal and human beings is the higher intelligence. Yet he is born, he appears as an animal, but with the higher intelligence of a human being.
No, not with higher intelligence of a human being, but with unlimited intelligence.
Yes. So
no matter what, where we or a soul, when he's in a body, according to the body he's in, his intelligence is limited. And even we all have experience of that ourselves when we were little. I mean, yeah, even when we were, say, that big, we don't have much intelligence, and we act in little childish ways, and we'll touch fire, we'll do this, we'll do that. No intelligence. Crawl out in the middle, or you see that the dogs will crawl out, and kangaroos, they'll just stand in front of cars, because they're, even though they're a soul, they're souls, and soul has unlimited intelligence, practically speaking, but its power is limited by the body it's in. But when Krishna takes a body, he doesn't take a body, he becomes that body, that form, for his own reasons, for his own pastimes, but he always has unlimited intelligence. And not only that, even when he's in the form of a hog, he's unlimitedly beautiful. That's inconceivable. Okay, anyone remember anything else? I saw someone else had their hand raised.
Jesus.
His power is beyond our calculation.
But was that, did it say that? Yes, he's inconceivably powerful. What does that mean? And then Prabhupada even said, everything is possible in it.
Without tiny brains, we cannot calculate.
We cannot calculate. So therefore, if he wants to take the form of a half man, half lion, he can do that. If he wants to take the form of a hog, he can do that. If he wants to take the form of a human, he can do that, and he's still unlimitedly powerful. Anyone else? Remember something?
Yeah. I think all his activities, like we talked about yesterday, is transcendental. So that's why we say inconceivable. So he comes from time to time.
Okay, what is the connection between transcendental and inconceivable?
Inconceivable is for...
Because you said that his activities we spoke about yesterday were all transcendental.
Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, we defined transcendental as being controlled by the three modes of material nature,
yeah,
or beyond the control of the three modes of material nature.
Yeah.
So they're inconceivable because we are not beyond the modes of material nature. So we can only conceive of what is in the modes of material nature, because that is the limit of what we can conceive of.
Yeah.
So he's beyond that. So that's inconceivable to someone in the modes of material nature.
And again, he's
let me just give you not a great example, but an example. Like a 4-year-old child asks his father, how does a car work? So what can the father or mother say? You know, you steer it by turning this way, and when you push your foot on this pedal, the car speeds up, and when you push your foot on that pedal, the car slows down. But how the car actually is working, just simply doesn't have the capacity to understand. So if you try to explain it, even though the words may be there, of course not with a 4-year-old child, but they just don't have the capacity to understand. So, like trying to understand, did you study algebra and trigonometry in school? You think so? Probably. But just like when you're telling a second grade student about algebra or some type of physics equations, they see the X's and the Y's and the 2's and the 4's, and they say, I know all about this X's and Y's and 2's and 4's. But actually, they have no idea. So similarly, the words, Krishna lifts a hill. So we say, yes, I know what that means. It means Krishna lifted the hill. I know what lift means. I know what Krishna means. I know what hill means. But actually, we have no idea what that means, actually. I mean, how much strength did Krishna have when he lifted the hill? Or did the hill become lighter? Or exactly how it all worked? And why Krishna did this? He's punishing Indra. He's allowing all the residents of Vrindavan to stare at him. He's giving a time when everyone in Vrindavan did nothing else but look at him. How is all this going on? He's teaching Indra at the same time. He's showing his favor and affection to the cows, to Giriraj himself. And he's exchanging different relationships with the people there under the hill, all the Prajapatis. And all this is going on at the same time. And Mother Yashoda is thinking, oh, Krishna, you look so thin because you're holding the hill and you haven't eaten anything. And she's thinking in one way and he's reciprocating with her in one way. And so many different things are going on and we have no idea really what's going on. I think I interrupted you, actually, didn't I?
No.
You only got a few words out.
No, we were talking about that.
Yeah.
Why it is inconceivable, because it all depends on the level of consciousness.
Yeah.
To that degree, then only someone can see or not see.
Yes. And even if one has the highest consciousness, a soul has the highest consciousness, he cannot fully understand Krishna. He can only understand one aspect, one part of Krishna. Mm-hmm. And it's only Krishna who really sees everything. He gets the 360 degree full view of all of reality. And we get one little part and we see, we get the word viewpoint. We get a view from our point. And everyone's point is different. Because everyone's consciousness is different, so no one can ever agree on anything. Because everyone sincerely and honestly sees everything differently. Have you noticed that no one can ever agree on anything? You've noticed that? Yes, was that it? Yeah. Because we actually see things differently because our consciousness is different. But the illusion is we think that what I see is reality and what you see. That's wrong.
Can I ask a question on that point? So is it that when Krishna is dancing with the gopis, or when he's sitting with the cowherd boys, everyone has their own Krishna? So is that what you're saying, that we all see our own Krishna?
Well, all the different Krishnas are Krishna. But especially on that level, each one he manifests a different relationship with everyone. And sometimes Krishna expands himself into unlimited Krishna so each of the cowherd boys or gopis can serve him. And he can reciprocate with them individually. But I don't know if we could say we each have our own Krishna, because it's not like there are many Krishnas that there, really, it's only one Krishna. But then again, he did separate himself into different forms on many occasions. Do you want your own Krishna?
Yes.
Okay. You want one that different from everyone else's Krishna?
Yeah, my one.
My one. What will you do with them? What you
helping kill the doggies.
As Balaram who killed all the donkeys. Oh, no, Krishna also killed some too.
Yeah.
Now, why did Krishna have Balaram go first into the forest, into the Talavan forest? Have you ever been to Talavan?
No, I don't think so. I've only heard of that.
Yeah, it's very nice, very peaceful, very, very farming. Have you been to Talavan? You went to Talavan, yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the earth in Talavan is very dark, very fertile and dark. And if you go there, you'll see it's very fertile and dark, very good for farming. But you won't see very many tall trees there. There's three at least in the temple. Is that your phone?
Is that also true to say, because Krishna is everywhere, it's only that we don't see him anywhere? And also materially, we can say that anything that we see can appear like an illusion.
Well, it's illusion in the sense, two senses.
Yeah.
One, in the sense that it's temporarily, and it's always changing. We think it's reality, it's firm reality, it's sat. But it's also illusion in the sense that we don't see its connection with Krishna. And everything has a connection with Krishna. So that's the specific function of Maya. It cuts our vision from seeing things in relationship with Krishna, seeing things as independent of Krishna, causes us to want to enjoy those things, thinking they're meant for us. So the example is given, like the cloud is not covering the sun, actually it's covering our eyes. So Maya covers our eyes and we don't see things exactly accurately unless we see them in relationship to Krishna.
So there is two parts in the illusion.
Huh?
So there is
two
parts.
Well, it's just one way of looking at it. But illusion in the sense of, or you could say that according to the Bhagavad Gita, it's sat or asat. It's illusory in the sense it's temporary. And we take the temporary things as if they're going to be there forever, and they're not. And it's illusion in the sense that, and also we're mistaken about so many things. So that's in also, like, close your eyes right now. Close your eyes. Yeah. What color is the wall?
Black.
Black. Okay, take a look. Is it black?
No.
Is it white?
Yeah,
so
yeah, white.
Yeah, okay, you were close. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so tomorrow we'll see everyone at the temple and to celebrate the appearance of Lord Nisringadeva, who came to protect his devotee Prahlad from a pillar. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai, Śrīla Bhagavata ki jai, Gajadevi ki jai, Śrīla Prabhupāda Bhaktivinoda ki jai.